2. Shoulder season. A low-pressure front from the Pacific Northwest had hung up on the nearby Continental Divide like a kite in a tree, and pieces of it were tearing off and blowing east over the river. For a while there'd be bright but ineffective sunlight from a chilly blue sky, and the river would seem dead. Then a bank of slate-colored clouds and spitting snow would sail in on a colder breeze, shading the river, dropping the temperature, and triggering a flurry of blue-wing olive mayflies and rising trout. While it was cloudy, I'd cast my brace of small dry flies, mending my line to get a down and across stream drift against the far bank where some feeding trout were stacked up. When the sun came back out and the rise sputtered to a stop, I'd furl my leader and stand waiting for the next squall, with my mind at first racing impatiently, then gradually slowing, and finally idling like a car waiting at a stoplight. The sunlight felt warm in an indecisive way, and the air smelled piney, but with a metallic edge from the lingering chill. It would have been a beautiful early spring day in the Rockies, except that the fish had stopped biting. That was last year on a river I fish often in the spring because it's only 20 miles from home, so I can drop everything to run up there when the weather turns snarky enough to bring on a hatch. I remember that specific day because the cloud cover was like an on-off switch, and it was a vivid example of how weather-dependent these little mayflies are. It was the kind of episode you'd invent to illustrate the point if you were the kind of storyteller who invented things. This was in mid-April, when the first migrating hummingbirds begin to arrive from Central America, the first bears awake from hibernation, looking skinny and befuddled, income taxes come due, and the blue-wing olive hatches begin to dribble off on days when the weather suits them. I don't recall how many trout I caught that day, but I'll guess that, as usual, I hooked and landed a fraction of the strikes I got, so it wouldn't have been many. The browns and rainbows in this hard-fished catch-and-release tailwater have learned the neat trick of being in two places at once, like certain subatomic particles, allowing them to eat your fly, but be somewhere else entirely when you set the hook. Getting out in this shoulder season is one of the great low-key pleasures of the sport. Conditions are often so far from perfect that you can't reasonably expect more than a pleasantly fishless walk along a river, where, without fretting too much about success, you can work out the off-season kinks in your casting, get your river legs back, and relocate the leaks in your waders you forgot to patch last fall. If you happen to guess the weather and the seasonal timing right and a little hatch sputters off, good, you made the right call. Even better if you hang a trout or two, and better yet if there's no one else on the river, so that on what might have been just another day, you can drive home feeling cagey. Sure, the fishing could have been better, but when you're out early like this, a few small trout against the odds seem more in the spirit of the season than lots of bigger ones. That will come soon enough, but for now it's best to ease in slowly. It's barely spring here at an elevation of 7,500 feet, with remnant snow still lingering in the shade, and November, when it all begins to wind down again, seems like a lifetime away. Here in Colorado, it's entirely up to you when you decide to get out, since there's no closed fishing season like there was in the Midwest where I grew up. Back there, it was all about opening day, which some in my family took seriously and others considered, along with bag limits and no trespassing signs, to be no more than suggestions. When I bought my first resident fishing license here in 1969, I asked the man behind the counter when the season opened. He said, "It never closes. You can fish any day of the year you can stand to be out there." I'd never heard of such a thing, but it seemed like a crucial element of the hippie utopia we envisioned back then. No big brother telling you when you could or couldn't go fishing. I was pretty footloose in those days and hadn't so much moved to Colorado as just sort of washed up here. But I remember putting the license in my wallet, walking out into a cold late winter afternoon and thinking, in a voice that sounded suspiciously like that of a favorite uncle,